going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices and give you a 5-year price guarantee on talk, text, and data. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Life comes with big money questions. Is it better to max out your 401k or put more in a brokerage account? Does buying a home make financial sense in today's market? Should you use extra cash to pay off debt or invest? NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast has the answers. Their finance journalists break down investing and budgeting strategies to help you build wealth and navigate major financial decisions. Make smarter money moves. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Welcome back, folks. The draft starts this evening, and the Saints will be trying to resolve some, I guess, unpleasant truths. And here to talk to us about it is Jeff Nowak, WWL Saints sideline reporter and digital content producer. Jeff, welcome to the show.
Hey, Neil. How's it going?
Jeff, I guess that's a fair way to put it, right? That there are some unpleasant truths that they're having to face with their current roster and need to be shored up.
Yeah, no, for sure. I think it's you kind of got to balance. Okay, what are the long-term needs? What are the short-term needs? What is your actual situation at quarterback? Where do you stand with Derek Carr? And how, I don't want to say desperate, but how motivated are you to go get the player that you really want in this draft, right? Whether it's drafting that player at 9, moving up to go get that player, maybe trading back to get a little more value. I think the important thing for the Saints at this point is to kind of be honest with themselves about where they are in the process of getting back to the playoffs. How many needs, how many wants are there on your team versus what are the musts on your team? And I think we'll find out tonight, because I think if they evaluate their quarterback position as a must, I think you're going to see a trade. I think you're going to see them go get a guy.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of interesting, because I've been following this whole thing with Derek Carr, and it's almost – I've never seen anything unfold like this before. Have you?
Yeah, it is a little strange. I wouldn't say it's completely, you know, novel in terms of there has been situations in the past where a player might be disenchanted with the situation. From a health perspective, it's confusing. I think what makes it feel a little weird is the complete lack of information being put out by the Saints regarding the most important player on their team, the highest paid player on their team. We haven't seen him. We haven't heard from him. Mickey Loomis talked yesterday, kind of came out with a statement early on acknowledging that Derek Carr has a shoulder issue, but with no additional details, said that a resolution clarity should be coming soon, but we won't have it prior to the draft. Part of that, I think, is gamesmanship. You're trying to maintain some kind of advantage of not kind of showing your hand to other teams. Part of it, I think, is they don't have all the answers right now, and, you know, they don't want to give out information that's only kind of half-baked. So, you know, it's a weird situation. I don't think teams are gonna look at that and say, well, they don't know what they're doing. I think the Saints have a plan. It's definitely, you know, if the answers to that question of what is the deal with Derek Carr were simple, I think we would have them by now. I think not having them means they're a little more complicated, and being complicated is not a positive thing for a team.
Now, is there a quarterback out there that's available that intrigues you? Because I'm not intrigued by many of the guys that are out there right now, quite frankly.
It's definitely not the strongest quarterback class we've ever seen, and I don't think it helps that we're coming off of a year where it may have been the strongest quarterback class we've ever seen in terms of all the first-round picks and several of those guys having success as rookies. You have Bo Nix, you have Jaden Daniels, Caleb Williams is the number one overall pick. The Patriots, I think, are really happy with what they've seen out of Drake May. J.J. McCarthy is a guy that we haven't even seen yet, but the Vikings really like him. Obviously, the Falcons are rolling with Penix as their starting quarterback. So, you know, it is, you kind of look at that and you say, well, if Cam Ward, who is the presumptive top pick in this draft, came out last year, where would he be ranked? I think he would be fourth, maybe fifth. I think he'd be somewhere around where Penix went. It's not a particularly exciting draft. And I think that's why you look at number nine and you say, you're the Saints. Are you going to force a quarterback pick at number nine? Are you going to take the top player on your board? And I think you have to take the top player on your board. What I will say is once you get kind of outside of that range, there are some really intriguing prospects. I think Tyler Shuck out of Louisville's really interesting. He's older. He's actually already 25, has some injury history, but, you know, he has a really strong profile in terms of throwing the football, in terms of his upside. Shedeur Sanders has all the excitement in the world. Whatever team lands him is going to be, you know, kind of riding a wave of entertainment value, if nothing else. Jackson Dart out of Ole Miss is really intriguing. He has a lot of fans out there. So, I mean, I think there are some really intriguing options. I just think you have to kind of be smart about the balancing value versus need here. And, you know, you kind of get, if you get past the Steelers at 21, maybe the Rams at 26, there's kind of this run of teams toward the back end of the draft, or the first round, I should say, that are not taking a quarterback. So they kind of end up being the targets. If you're a team looking at the second round saying, I don't want to wait for the Browns or the Giants to kind of make those QB decisions at the top of the second round, you could very easily say, hey, we're going to jump those two teams. We're going to trade in to the back end of the draft, maybe the Bills at 30, maybe the Eagles at 32, and get a guy that you really do like but don't feel comfortable making a top 10 pick. So, you know, that's kind of where I am. I think Tyler Shuck would be my bet if they do go after a quarterback. Jackson Dart would be kind of next on that list. But, you know, I would be surprised. I'll say it this way. I would be surprised to see the Saints come out of this draft without a quarterback at some point.
Yeah, just because of the uncertainty, right? I mean, if he's not playing next season, you got to have somebody else.
Yeah, I mean, I think this team, I think they are interested in Spencer Rattler and developing Spencer Rattler, but I just think when you don't have a quarterback, right, and whether Derek Carr plays or not, he is kind of a bridge to, at this point, nowhere. At this point, he would be a bridge to nothing because you don't know who that next quarterback would be. So until you do, you have to keep taking swings in the draft. Now, I would love to see there be a quarterback at number nine that they could take a swing at and feel really good about. I just don't think that's there. So, but at the same time, you do need to keep bringing in prospects, bringing in guys you like, and seeing how they develop.
Mickey Loomis announces that they're going to exercise the fifth-year option for Chris Olave, but not exercise the option on Trevor Penning. That kind of forecasts a little bit about what they may be looking for in this draft as well, right?
Yeah, I don't think it changes a ton because this always kind of made the most sense. Now, Chris Olave, I think what people forget when they talk about the fifth-year option is it's not just plugging an extra year onto a rookie contract. It's adding an extra year onto a rookie contract at the average contract value of the third to 25th salary at those positions. So it ends up being a significant raise from a rookie scale deal. For Chris Olave, it would be somewhere between $15 and $16 million for that extra year. For Trevor Penning, it would be a bit over $16 million. So you adding that extra year comes at a pretty significant cost. So for Chris, yeah, it makes sense because he's dealing with the injury history and the concussions, and you don't know what he's going to look like. So I don't think you want to commit multi-years until you kind of see that. So you kind of add a little bit of length to that runway. And we'll see where we're at this time next year. Maybe he stays healthy, he looks great, and you end up coming to a deal before you even get to that option. For Penning, I think it's kind of the opposite where, you know, there's no point in adding an extra year to his contract at $16 million. we kind of saw this with Cesar Ruiz a few years ago, where they declined his option, then signed him to an extension before the season to a four-year, $44 million extension. So I think for Trevor, it's going to come down to, hey, you're going to show up at camp. Let's see how you look. Let's see how you fit in this new offense. And then maybe you extend him before the season, or you see how it plays out in the season and consider it that way. Because that is what Mickey said. He said not picking up that option doesn't mean they're moving on from him. Just means it doesn't make sense to pick up that option. So I don't think that necessarily changes. If you were looking at a tackle that you really like at number nine, then you're going to take that tackle. But I don't think it means you have to take a tackle. I think it's just going to come down to whether the guy you have a high grade on is available. I also wouldn't be surprised if, you know, prior to the season, you see them extending Trevor and kind of feeling good about your two young tackles kind of building into the future. He started all 17 games last year. He switched positions. I thought, you know, he struggled at points, but you expected that. So yeah. I think this is a good point for him to either kind of, you know, swim or sink at that spot, and that'll tell you where you need to go.
So if we remove the quarterback situation out of the picture for just a moment, what would you identify as the number one need in your mind for the Saints?
Yeah, you know, I think the thing to keep in mind with this team is, yes, you're changing offenses with Kellen Moore, but I think the more significant change is on the defensive side of the ball. And we've talked about this in the past. You're kind of turning from a 4-3, you know, big-bodied defensive end scheme, the three techniques inside, to more of an odd man front, a 3-4, where you need outside linebackers, particularly on the weak side, where you need kind of a more athletic outside linebacker who can drop into coverage, who can chase guys down on the backside. And to me, that's the biggest need, is I feel pretty good about kind of my strong side run-stopping defensive ends between, you know, Chase Young, Carl Granderson, Cam Jordan. I feel good about that side of the equation. I don't feel like you have someone you can kind of throw on the other side and be that, you know, more traditional outside linebacker. And, you know, I think this team really, like, say what you want about the offense. If you can't pair an offensive head coach with a defense that can get off the field, you're not going to win a lot of games. We saw the Saints struggle with that back in those 7-9 seasons, right? Drew Brees was always Drew Brees, but you didn't have a defense that could support him, and you lost a lot of games. Once you figured the defensive side of the ball out, you started to win games again, and we saw this great run where they had the most wins in the NFL over a four-year stretch, won the division four times in a row. So I feel like that's where I'm focusing. If I'm looking at needs, I'm trying to find an outside linebacker, edge rusher, who fits what Brandon Staley, the new Saints defensive coordinator, needs his outside linebackers to do. Because right now I think you're trying to figure out who can transition from scheme to scheme, but I would really love to pair him with a player who he feels like fits. So to me, that's the biggest need. And then you can look at defensive tackle, you can look at cornerback. But at the end of the day, I feel like I have starters at those positions. I don't feel like I have that outside linebacker I need. So that's where I'm looking, and that's where my mock drafts have been.
So you think that DeMario Davis, Pete Werner, these guys, they're going to fit into this scheme just fine?
Yeah, so basically the difference is, you know, you're inside linebacker, outside linebacker, which the outside linebacker position is effectively replacing what would be a defensive end.
Defensive end,
then
right.
Defensive tackles are now in a 3-4 going to be defensive ends per se. And then you'd have the defensive or the nose tackle in the middle. So I think, you know, you kind of take away some of the emphasis on the inside linebacker position because you're really never going to have more than two of them on the field at the same time. So I feel like that, you know, those two in that role, in that inside linebacker role, do fit. And you're going to be fine there. I would still have to add depth behind them. But I don't see that as a major need because I just feel like you can find those guys. The Saints have, you know, if you can say one thing about the Saints in terms of development, they have been able to develop some really good inside linebacker prospects. And we've seen it with Caden Ellis. We've seen it with Zach Bond even. Obviously didn't do it here, but went out to Philadelphia and start in a scheme that is very similar to what the Saints are going to be running. So I feel pretty good about where they are in that position.
Availability, I mean, as we look, we're nine. As we look at the teams in front of us, I'm sure you've evaluated what their preferences are going to be and what they're actually looking for. Does that work for what we're kind of looking for at being nine?
You mean in terms of who they might take?
Yes. I mean, does it look like it may align for us? Or do we have a bunch of teams in front of us looking for the same thing?
You know, it's always tough to say because no team wants it to be common knowledge what they're looking for in the draft, right? Like, we spend months and months talking about it, but at the end of the day, if every team had their way, we would have no idea what they were looking at, so that, you know, other teams don't feel like, well, I want that guy, I want to jump him. So it's tough. Like, I think the Giants right now are trying to project a lot of interest in quarterbacks because they want someone to feel like, I want to trade up and go get a quarterback, when in reality, they probably want Abdul Carter, the edge rusher out of Penn State, who's, you know, easily the third best player in this draft. Now, the Giants need a quarterback. The Browns need a quarterback. There's really no one to take. So, you know, it's tough to say. Like, the draft board that I've been looking at, you know, the mock drafts, the consensus, whatever, it does seem to line up in a way that I think the Saints will benefit from, in the sense that there should be some really, really talented, intriguing players on the board at nine, whether it's Tyler Warren, the tight end out of Penn State, whether it's Tet McMillan, the wide receiver out of Arizona. You know, I don't think, other than Abdul Carter, I don't see an edge rusher going in the top eight picks. So if you're the Saints and you feel like, hey, I want an edge rusher, you should be able to kind of have your pick of the litter after Abdul Carter. So that's a positive thing. But hey, what if all these teams are trying to lead everyone off, and then there's a run on edge rushers from like 5, 6, 7, maybe the Panthers take one at number 8, and suddenly, you know, that kind of goes out the window. So, you know, it's a good spot to be in, because I think you have more than, you know, 8 first round graded players, and that's kind of where you're at. You don't want to be sitting in the first round with 0 players on the board that you have a first round grade on. So in that sense, like, you should get a talented player, a player that you could kind of slot in and say, this is going to be our guy at this position, but it's still tough to know exactly who that's going to be.
You know, it's interesting. I know you watch this every year with a lot more intensity than I do, but I watch it as well. It's rare that you see like complete, total, out of left field surprise picks. You know, it's just, everybody's always got kind of, I love the gamesmanship of all of this, but in the end, a lot of the folks that are projecting this stuff, more often than not, they're getting it right. Right? I mean, at least that's my interpretation of what's happened, especially in the first 20 teams that are picking in the first round.
It does seem like that's true. You know, the team that it seems like most often kind of comes out of left field and does something people don't expect is the Saints. You know, with the Peyton Turner pick comes to mind. I don't think a lot of people had Peyton right. Turner on their board. Cesar Ruiz was kind of a surprise. That was the 2020 draft, which was weird in the sense of, you know, no one really got a good sense of their scouting because of COVID. But no, I mean, like, I think Michael Penix last year with the Falcons, that was a surprise.
Jeff, you could go back to the Russell Erksleben choice too, right?
Yes, you certainly could. You know, I think the big surprise this year would be if the Saints finally, for the first time under Mickey Loomis, traded back. Because, I don't know, I think if Tyler Warren is there at number 9 and the Saints don't want to take Tyler Warren, I think there's going to be a team somewhere that wants Tyler Warren, just for example. You know, and if it's the Dolphins at 13, if it's the Colts at 14, you know, because I think there's, you know, one thing Mickey Loomis said yesterday that I agree with. You know, he was asked kind of where the strengths are in this draft, and he said there's a lot of really talented defensive linemen, probably more so than previous years, that, you know, you could probably feel like you could slide back a few picks and get one of those players. So that would kind of be the surprise, just in the sense that, you know, they've never done it. And Mickey says every year, it's like, I'm not against trading back, but, you know, if you'd never do it, then it would stand to reason that you aren't. So I feel like if it doesn't happen this year, it's probably never going to happen.
So the Saints pick at number 9 will happen about what time this evening, you think?
Oh, yeah, that's tough.
How long do you have on the clock? You got 20, is it, how long is it? 10 minutes?
10 minutes.
On the clock? 10 minutes,
yeah,
on the clock.
So you're kind of just rolling through. It depends how, you know, the first few picks is tough because, you know, sometimes they just come in straight away. Sometimes teams like to wait it out. I would guess sometime between 8:30 and 9 o'clock would be the pick.
Yeah.
The draft starts at 7. It takes forever to get started. You know, how, like last year, for instance, it was weird that the walk from the green room seemed like it was about a mile and a half. So that took extra time. So it's always tough to gauge, but it's not a fast process. They make sure to get their money's worth out of these broadcasts. Oh, yeah. And it's in Green Bay this year. So, you know, when it was in New York every year and you kind of got a read of how long everything was going to take, now it's kind of going to be based on what the whole setup is like, and they're going to want to make sure to feature Green Bay and Lambeau Field and all that. So it's really tough to say for sure.
Well, we look forward to checking in with you in the aftermath of all of this. One thing for sure, the NFL has a method to their madness, so we can expect that revealing itself yet again tonight, not unlike other years as well, right?
Oh, no doubt. And they give them credit. They do a great job kind of pumping up the interest level in this event. Like, it's not like this for the NBA draft. It's not like this for the MLB draft. Like, the NFL draft is an event all in and of itself that's built up for months and months and months. Like, the number of people that you're going to see in the crowd alone is insane. Like, one of the reasons we can't have it here unless they change the dates around is because we couldn't possibly accommodate the number of people that would bring, along with the number of people Jazz Fest brings. So it really is remarkable how they've built this event up.
We could have the draft at Jazz Fest. That would be interesting.
That would be something. That would be something.
Yeah, absolutely. Jeff Nowak, WWL Saints Online reporter and digital content producer, thanks so much for joining us. We'll see what's going to happen this evening. Kind of exciting. We'll be right back, folks. 504-260-1870 on the Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text Line.
I've never felt like this before. It's like you just get me. I feel like my true self with you. Does that sound crazy? And it doesn't hurt that you're gorgeous. Okay, that's it. I'm taking you home with me. I mean, you can't find shoes this good just anywhere. Find a shoe for every you from brands you love, like Birkenstock, Nike, Adidas, and more at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Hey everyone, quick shout out to Whole Foods Market. You know I'm all about eating fresh and finding quality ingredients, and that's exactly what Whole Foods delivers. Whether you're grabbing organic produce, high quality meats, or just a quick healthy snack, they've got you covered. Plus, they're all about sustainability and supporting local farmers, which I love. Next time you're grocery shopping, check them out. You'll taste the difference. Spring is the perfect time to refresh your table, and Whole Foods Market has everything you need. Hosting brunch? Picture this. Flaky, buttery quiche, crispy bacon, fresh berries, and of course, cold-pressed orange juice to brighten up your morning. And if you're in the mood for something fizzy, check out their seasonal Italian sodas. Berry Blend and Orange Hibiscus are total must-tries. So whether you're planning a casual get-together or a full-on feast, Whole Foods Market has you covered. Make Whole Foods Market your destination for all spring gatherings.
True North stores have Primo Eats and Pepsi brand products that are heavy on taste and light on your wallet. Right now, buy any Primo sandwich and add a 20-ounce Pepsi brand beverage for just $1. Handmade every day, Primo uses quality meats and cheeses. Complete the meal with a Pepsi. Grab any Primo sandwich and pair it with a 20-ounce Pepsi brand beverage for just $1. Get more with the True Rewards mobile app. Available in your app store. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
It's no surprise that facial hair is personal. It grows from your face. That's why Dollar Shave Club makes the razors, but you make the rules. Whether you're going smooth shaven or maintaining a beard, Dollar Shave Club offers shave and grooming products that are always high quality, but never overpriced. Dollar Shave Club products are now available everywhere. Or visit their site right now for 20% off $20 or more and get your products delivered right to your door. Visit dollarshaveclub.com/shaveup and use promo code SHAVEUP for 20% off $20 or more. And remember, whatever you shave, welcome to the club.
Today's podcast is sponsored by Midi Health. At any given time, 61% of adult women say they want to lose weight. But for many, that's easier said than done. If you've had trouble losing weight, don't lose hope. Midi Health uses a deep understanding of women's hormones and a combination of weight loss medications to create a customized plan for each user. Midi Health can help you achieve more effective and sustainable weight loss by addressing hormone imbalances. Midi can also prescribe proven weight loss medications that help you experience reduced appetite and increased feelings of fullness. When paired with hormone optimization, you're not just managing your weight, you're also supporting your body's natural processes. which means you can overcome those weight loss plateaus that in the past have been so difficult to move beyond. So if you're ready to combine the power of hormones with the power of weight loss medications, visit joinmidi.com today. Discover how this innovative approach can lead you to lasting success. That's joinmidi.com.
And stay with us. Ready to go party? Now's your chance to win a pair of tickets to the second weekend of Jazz Fest. Today's password is Gentilly. That's Gentilly. Go to WWL.com/contest and register to win. It is really easy, folks. Don't miss your chance to win. All you have to do is listen at 9, noon, 3, and 6 for the Jazz Fest code word of the day to see amazing artists like Pearl Jam, Luke Combs, Lenny Kravitz, Cage the Elephant, Santana, Patti LaBelle, Trombone Shorty, and so much more. Good luck and happy festing from Miller Lite, the official beer of Jazz Fest and WWL. Gentilly is the word. Talking about happy festing, Emily Madero, president and CEO of the French Quarter Festival, joins us. Emily, welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Thank you for joining us. I just want to congratulate you for an incredible French Quarter Fest. You ordered up the weather, you delivered it, and on so many different fronts. I had an opportunity to get out there 3 of the 4 days, and it was a repeat of the previous day each time. Awesome time.
Yeah, it was a really beautiful year. I have to give a lot of credit to our incredible crew and volunteer board and, you know, everybody who puts the festival together. But Mother Nature certainly helped us enjoy just such a beautiful celebration. The question to you, I guess, is what did you eat and what did you hear while you were at festival?
I have to tell you, I had a little bit of everything. There was a crab cake sandwich that I'd have to, and I forgot the vendor's name, forgive me. But it was the highlight of my weekend. It was incredible. But I tried so many different things. But my biggest surprise, I'm going to tell you, and I talked about this on the radio the day after, was in the Jackson Square Sunday. The mm-hmm. Big Easy Boys, they put on, I think, one of the best performances I've ever seen at French Quarter Fest. It was a very interesting performance. Four male singers, 3 female singers, a full band backup. They just put on, I mean, it was almost like a Las Vegas show. It was great. It was real. I mean, and they, I was watching the crowd and people were coming up and they just weren't leaving. They weren't moving on. They were staying from beginning to end, which was awesome, you know, for local talent like that.
Yeah, I mean, those are just magical moments, whether you sort of went and sought them out or if that, you know, is a new act that you're discovering. I think, you know, I'm moving around the festival so much. I never get to stay anywhere for a whole set. But there were so many moments where I just was really struck by the incredible talent on the stages. But, you know, everybody was in such good spirits. I think I was on Esplanade Avenue over at the Jazz Museum at the Mint during part of Johnny Sketch and the Dirty Notes set. And, you know, people were out on Esplanade. They had their chairs set up. It was a block party. And, you know, they're incredible musicians as well. Of course, they're all classically trained, but get together to have a lot of fun and keep it funky, too.
Absolutely. And that's the unique thing, right, is that it's almost like 6,000 parties under the tent of the big party.
Well, that's
party,
what we do
right?
here in New Orleans. It's like Mardi Gras. You know, there's so many subcultures and experiences that you can enjoy under the umbrella of a carnival. And it's the same for French Quarter Festival. I mean, we have such an incredibly diverse culinary culture here. We have such an incredibly diverse musical culture here. And I think our goal is to make sure that we're representing, you know, as much of that as we can. You know, certainly you see that across the diversity of the musical genres and the different stages that might really focus on different kinds of music. You know, you can go from all New Orleans brass band music on the Louisiana Fish Fry stage and then walk over and see some really cool eclectic artists over at the BK House in a much smaller setting. So I love that there's a lot of diversity and something for everybody.
One of my favorite stages, it was a small stage, the Pan Am stage, where you had the river as the backdrop to the stage. I got to see, I can't remember the band from Mexico first, but I saw Nia Jones right after. We sat there in the shade and just, you know, had I had a hammock, it would have been a great nap experience with the music in the background.
You're the first person to say that. Yeah. I think maybe we need to find a hammock sponsor.
Yeah. I mean, it would have been just fabulous to just sit there, lay there, actually, all afternoon, you know.
I miss Nio's set, but she's an incredible artist. I happen to be going by that same stage for Anais St. John, who's another local vocalist and jazz musician. And she brought up her two daughters. I think one is in high school and one is in her early 20s. And it was just one of those really fun, you know, I'm sure spur of the moment, beautiful family experiences. But I love that that kind of thing can happen as well, that there's space for that on our stages.
So you guys, correct me if I'm wrong, I think y'all, this was the first year that you were cashless. Is that correct?
Yes, sir. Yes.
I got to tell you, it seemed to have gone seamlessly. I'm sure there were hiccups, but I can tell you that the line seemed to move faster. And I think a lot of folks kind of appreciated. That's the comments I was hearing.
Yeah, it's great to hear. You know, I think anything has a little bit of a learning curve. But, you know, we were really pleased with the rollout. Our goal really was to be able to provide a more seamless experience across the festival, because, of course, our site is so spread out and we have 70 independent food vendors in addition to beverage tents everywhere. And we wanted to make it as easy as possible for folks to go from one vendor to another to, you know, maybe a festival beverage booth and sort of have the same experience and expectations and also just spend less time in line. So I think it worked really well. You know, our food vendors, you know, like I said, there's always concern when something is new, but all the feedback that we've been hearing on the back end is that, you know, sales increased because lines move faster, and when they're happy, we're happy.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting. I don't know if you poll the restaurant operators and others. I've had an opportunity to talk to a number of them. I'm friends with a whole bunch of folks down there. And they were all very, very pleased with the festival, the numbers. They seem to do good business. And so it seemed like everybody was happy. And that's a difficult thing, balance, to kind of work out, right?
It definitely is. And I think, you know, we're very conscientious that, you know, this festival has grown very organically and to be a much larger event than it was originally. And we are here in a neighborhood where businesses operate all year round and where people live. And so, you know, we're appreciative of the patience with, you know, the additional foot traffic and some of the street closures to keep people safe. But I think all in all, people really love it. They plan for it. And the fact that it is free and accessible just makes it easier for, you know, residents and our community to participate and do that in a way that's, you know, comfortable and easy. And we do hear, you know, it's not the same across the board. Of course, there's so many different kinds of businesses in the French Quarter, but
sure,
certainly our origin story was to hold an event that was a net positive and that brought important economic boost to the businesses in the neighborhood. And so that's always going to be a really important lens and anchor for us to make sure that whatever we do is sensitive to those businesses. And most of the restaurants and the hotels in the quarter, certainly many of them participate with us directly as food vendors. And the ones that don't, you know, they report second to Mardi Gras. French Quarter Festival weekend is their best weekend in terms of, you know, hotel occupancy and restaurant business in the French Quarter. And a lot of that is obviously driven because it is such a hyper-local event. You know what I mean? I think obviously we've got Jazz Fest going on this weekend, and that's such an incredible event for the city of New Orleans and for our cultural ecosystem, and certainly drives a lot of traffic. But I think, you know, what we do is a little bit more concentrated in this neighborhood specifically. So for those businesses, it really is a boon.
Looking forward, I'll be out there broadcasting tomorrow from 10 to 1 at the Miller Tent. Let me ask you this. There was a recent announcement by the Audubon Institute about the reengineering of the Governor Nichols Wharf. Will that be available for next year's French Quarter Fest?
You know, I think the long-term vision certainly is to open up the open up the green space and connect Crescent Park to all the riverfront area in the French Quarter and where we host the festival currently. Only time will tell how quickly that project will roll out. I'm a little skeptical that it will be ready for next year, but I think, you know, by 2027, 2028, certainly I think we will have an expanded riverfront.
This looks like I was looking at an artist rendering of it. It just looks like it would be a wonderful venue, right?
Absolutely. And even, you know, when we were down at the Jazz Museum at the Mint over the weekend, you know, they have started construction, taking down some of the roof line on the existing warehouse structure. So it's exciting to see, you know, how that's already transforming. And certainly when you look at pictures of the French Quarter before so much of it was redeveloped in the early 80s in order to create access to the riverfront from the French Quarter, you know, it really has transformed the neighborhood that we operate in. I think it's certainly a quality of life benefit, but also, you know, from a tourism and hospitality standpoint, transforming some of the space here into green spaces and into public spaces, I think is a great thing in terms of, you know, the modern use of the city and the geography here.
Absolutely. Final question. I know you've looked at the numbers. What was the attendance? And maybe we need a drum roll, Coleman.
Well, you know, your timing is impeccable. We just spent 2 days, my team really focused on our debrief meeting. And, you know, of course, it was an incredible success. But, you know, we're really focusing, we did see attendance go up about 2%. And I think what we're also trying to do a good job is thinking about not just that number of individuals, but the quality of the impact that the event has on New Orleans' cultural economy and the city in general. So the fact that we had, you know, our audience rating us 10 out of 10 felt great in terms of an event that, you know, is beloved and that people had a good experience. We generated over $3.6 million worth of direct income for the food vendors that participated. There was $88 million worth of positive PR internationally through earned media and press about the City of New Orleans and French Quarter Festival. And we diverted a ton of waste. So, you know, big events are not always known for being environmentally sustaining. And while it will take us a little bit more time to figure out our final diversion metrics, I can report that we delivered 40,000 pounds of compost and 28,000 pounds of recycled material. So hopefully doing it in a way that's not only culturally sustaining, but also environmentally sustaining. And quite frankly, I think the biggest measure is just the spirit and the energy and the joy. I mean, it really was palpable all weekend long. I just felt like people were in the best of spirits.
Crowds were well behaved.
They were
well behaved. And I'll tell you something else. All of the folks you had picking up trash, people noticed that, and they were picking it up themselves as well. And I love that. I just love seeing
that. We got to keep the booth clean.
It was contagious. It really was. It was contagious. And that's a testament to paying attention to the details, and you guys truly have. And thank you so much for joining us today, and congratulations on the success. Y'all bring a special oomph to a special city, and we appreciate same.
Well, we love New Orleans. We love our community, and it's always a pleasure to connect with you. Thanks for having me.
Thank you, ma'am. Emily Madero, President and CEO of French Quarter Festival. We'll be right back, folks. Stay with us.
Since the dawn of Major League Baseball, every player has honed their unique skills.
Judge, drill it deep to left.
Ohtani connects and it's gone.
Skeen strikes out the side.
Bobby Witt Jr. throws in time.
Harper does it again.
Witness the hills of the game in ballparks nationwide. Get your tickets today at MLB.com/tickets. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Every morning brings a fresh new energy.
This is Today with
Sarah. And no matter what the day holds, we come to the Today Show for all of it.
When things are tough, we talk about it. When there's something to figure out, we dig into it. And when there's joy, we celebrate it.
Because today is where it's all happening. We get the best start to every morning because we start it together.
Watch the Today Show with Savannah Guthrie and Craig Melvin weekdays at 7 a.m. on NBC.
On a text line, it says the trash pickup at French Quarter Fest was fabulous, off the chain, and the portalette cleanliness was absolutely phenomenal. Great job. I agree. I just wanted to read that. Emily and her entire organization did a phenomenal job in the presentation of French Quarter Fest. Just another thing that we have to be thankful for about our great city, the place that we call home. I love highlighting these positive outcomes when we execute. And that's kind of, you know, as an operations guy, as I was walking through French Quarter Fest on those three occasions, that was the word that kept popping in. You know, I know it's kind of weird. I'm at a festival. I'm having some cocktails. I'm feeling good. But every time, you know, you came in contact with the folks that were working there, it just seemed like they were executing, you know, all the time. And I was serious about the garbage pickup and how it was contagious for people. You know, it was just so clean. I mean, you had hundreds of thousands of people that had visited there, and it was hard to find garbage on the street. It was like, oh, my God, we can do it. We can do it. And we did it. And it was just great. Feeling and an exciting feeling for that. You know, Jazz Fest does the same thing. They got people out there, you know, minding the ship, making sure that you're not having to walk through piles and piles of garbage out there. It just makes for a better time. Hope folks are headed out to the Jazz Fest. And don't forget, we will be out there tomorrow broadcasting live from the Miller tent. Want to thank the Miller folks for hosting us every year. I look forward to it every year. Got kind of get to see the operations from the backside of Jazz Fest, and they do an incredible job, and we'll talk more about that tomorrow. We'll be right back, folks. We'll check in with Scoot to see what he has headed your way. Stay with us. Scoot joins us. What do we have coming up, Scoot?
All right, let's talk about parents being arrested if their kids commit crimes. We'll get into that. Also, we'll talk a little bit about Jazz Fest. As Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth have a makeup studio in his office. Also, we'll talk about the draft and the Saints. Are they going to pick a quarterback? A lot to talk about this afternoon.
It's got a great lineup headed your way, folks. Stay tuned for Scoot. Hope you enjoyed today's show. We'll check back with you in the morning from Jazz Fest.